I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith. Dramatised for radio by Dawn Lowe Watson. Starring Amanda Root as Cassandra and Helena Bonham Carter as Rose. With Hayden Gwynn, William Dufresne, Stuart Milligan and Jamie Glover.
I write this sitting in the kitchen sink. That is, my feet are in it. The rest of me is on the draining board. I can't say I'm really comfortable, and there is a depressing smell of carbolic soap, but this is the only part of the kitchen where there is any daylight left. The twilight view through the windows above the sink is excessively drear. Beyond the dank garden in the courtyard are the ruined walls on the edge of the moat. It is comforting to look away from the windows and towards the kitchen fire, near which my sister Rose is ironing, though she obviously can't see properly, for we have no electricity, and it will be a pity if she scorches her only nightgown. Rose looks particularly fetching by firelight, because she is a pinkish gold, very light and feathery. Although I'm rather used to her, I know she is a beauty. She is nearly 21 and very bitter with life. I am 17, look younger, feel older. I am no beauty, but have a neatish face.
Rose, don't you think our situation is really rather romantic?
I see nothing romantic about being shut up in a crumbling ruin surrounded by a sea of mud.
Oh, you thought it was romantic once.
Things were different. Then we had some money. Maybe you'll end up being a writer and write a proper novel instead of Father and keep us all. He's certainly never going to.
That's true. There was a time when Father looked as though he was going to be a very important writer indeed, when he bought the castle. But he hasn't started yet. Mother died 8 years ago, and 3 or 4 years back, Father had a spasm of sociability and presented us with a stepmother, Topaz, a famous artist's model. She puts on rather an arty pose, which includes painting and lute playing. But her kindness is perfectly genuine, and so is her cooking. I am very, very fond of Topaz.
Ah, girls.
She is wearing her ancient orange tea gown. Her masses of pale straight hair is flowing down her back to her waist. She is 29 and has had 2 husbands before Father.
Topaz, why don't you go to London and earn some money?
It costs too much to live there. 2 of the men I sit for are abroad and I don't like working for McMorris. Your father says the men who paint me nude paint my body and think of their job, but McMorris paints my head and thinks of my body. And it's true. I've had more trouble with him than I should care to let your father know.
I should have thought it was worthwhile to have a little trouble in order to earn some real money.
Then you have the trouble, dear.
I'm perfectly willing to. It may interest you both to know that for some time now I've been considering selling myself. If necessary, I shall go on the streets.
You can't go on the streets in the depths of Suffolk.
But if Topaz will kindly lend me the fare to London and give me a few hints...
I'm afraid I've never been on the streets. I rather regret it. I must sink to the depths in order to rise to the heights.
Oh, Topaz.
Anyway, you're the last girl to lead a hard-working, immoral life. Mm. If you're really taken with the idea of selling yourself, you'd better choose a wealthy man and marry him respectably.
How can I meet anyone?
Oh, dear, darling. We'll find some way of making money. I could give a lute concert in the village.
Don't upset yourself. It'll be all right.
Now it's raining again, and Stephen is coming across the courtyard. His mother used to be our maid when we could afford one. When she died, he had nowhere to go. Now he grows vegetables for us and looks after the hens and does 1,000 odd jobs. He is 18 now, very fair and noble-looking, but his expression is just a fraction daft. He's always been rather devoted to me. Father calls him my swain.
You're spoiling your eyes, Miss Cassandra.
Hello, Miss Marcy. Well,
hello, Thomas. Hello. I brought Mr. Mortmain's book.
Miss Marcy, how kind of you.
How are you all?
Is there any tea?
I must take this one to Mortmain at once. Oh, here he is.
Hello, Father. I'll read any detective novel, good, bad, or indifferent, Miss Marcy, but a vintage one's among the rarest pleasures of life.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mortmain.
Tea?
How is he?
Perfectly well, and useless, as always.
Rose is depressed about our finances. Oh, you can have an egg in a moment. The hens have yielded to prayer.
We mustn't bore Miss Marcy with our worries.
Sometimes an outside mind.
Well, you could suggest some ways of earning money.
Or of making it go further. I'm sure you're all much too artistic to be really practical. Let's hold a board meeting.
I'll boil my own egg.
So we all sat round the table and elected Miss Marcy chairman. And secretary too, so she could keep the minutes.
Now then, inquiry into the finances of the Mortmain family. First, rent.
£40 a year. But when old Mr. Cotton at Scopeney Hall was our landlord, he never seemed to mind.
They say the hall's going to be reopened. Two boys from the village have been taken on as extra gardeners. Now, what about food? Can you do it on 15 shillings a week?
What 15 shillings?
If Miss Marcy is really going to advise us, you'd better be told we have no visible income at all this year.
Last year, Father got £40 from America. Jacob Wrestling still sells there.
Topaz posed in London for 3 months, saved £8 for us and borrowed 50.
And we sold a tall boy for £20.
We've been living on the tall boy since Christmas.
Couldn't you, make a saving on Stephen's wages?
I don't want wages.
You see, Stephen is like a son of the house.
No wages at all? Just his key?
We don't pay ourselves wages. Could I earn money as a model?
Your figure's too pretty. There isn't enough drawing in your bones and you'd never sit still. I could go to London. I might be able to send about 10 shillings a week home.
I'll go to Scopeney Hall as a maid.
They do have to be trained, dear. Couldn't you do some pretty sewing?
What on? Sacking?
Rose is hopeless at sewing.
That only leaves Mr. Mortmain. My dears, what is the real trouble with Mr. Mortmain? Is it drink?
Poor Mortmain. As if he ever laid his hands on enough to buy a bottle of beer.
It's sheer laziness. And I don't believe he was ever very good, really. I expect Jacob Wrestling was overestimated.
Oh, no, Miss Rose. It's a great book. Everyone knows that. But you can't write just for the wanting. I've been thinking, Miss Cassandra, that I should get work. They'd have me at Fourstone's farm.
But the garden? Stephen?
The days will soon be drawing out, and I'll work here in the evenings. So you could put me down for 25 shillings a week, Miss Marcy. And I get my dinner at Fourstone's.
But Stephen...
I ought to pay for my bed and lodging, Miss Cassandra. And for past favours. And all the books Mr. Mortmain's lent me.
When Miss Marcy left, I went out into the courtyard to say goodbye. Stephen took her home. The castle was looking particularly lovely. It was a queer sort of night. The full moon was hidden by clouds, but had turned them silver so that the sky was quite light. Belmont Tower, high on its mound, seemed even taller than usual. Once I looked at the sky, I wanted to go on looking.
I think this dress is rather a success, don't you?
Yes.
What on earth's that? What have you two been doing?
This is Father's old yellow cardigan.
Oh, yellow no more. More the colour of very old moth.
We unearthed this packet of green dye. Do you remember? It's what we used when you were an elf in the school play.
I'm afraid Mortmain may not like it.
He doesn't. Your arms look revolting, old green. Can't you get off the dye?
It doesn't seem to wash off. Mm. Goodness, listen to that rain. The lane will be like a river.
The garden's completely flooded. This is a real storm.
Let me add to your simple pleasure in nature's violence by reminding you that there will shortly be at least 6 glorious new leaks in our roof.
I'd best stay up in the attic and empty the saucepans as they fill. You've run out of buckets.
So, Stephen's got work at Fourstone's. He'll make a very good head of the family. You like Stephen?
Of course.
Have you dyed all your clothes green?
I've not many to dye. How's the work, Father?
You're too old to believe in fairy tales.
Oh, honestly, aren't you trying to write it all?
My dear Cassandra.
That night was my bath night. The bathroom bath is so enormous that there is never enough hot water for more than a few inches, and a draught blows down from the tower. So I decided to have mine here in the tin bath in the kitchen, where it's warm. Look, I'll make a screen from the green sheets we draped over the clothes closet.
What will you have to read tonight, Miss Cassandra?
I'll have volume B-I-S to C-A-L of the encyclopedia we sold the vicar. I borrowed it back again. And, oh, and the home chat Miss Marcy lent me.
I'd be glad if you'd have this, please.
How did you come by that?
Credit, Miss Cassandra. On account of my having a job, I know how you like to eat in the bath.
Oh, yes, but a whole tuppenny bar. I do love milk chocolate. Oh, thank you, Stephen.
There's not much else you could have in here, is there? Except perhaps a wireless.
Well, don't go getting a wireless on credit. Come in.
Shh, easy, boys. Didn't you hear someone say come in?
Shh.
No, no, no. Anyone at home?
No, no, I want to look at this place first. God, it's magnificent. Do you realize that wall's part of an old castle?
Can I help you?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Excuse us, we turned down your lane by mistake and our car got stuck in the mud. We were hoping we might find someone to help us get it out.
Or if we have to leave it there all night, we felt we'd better warn you because it's blocking the lane.
I'll just find my boots.
Wonderful little place you have here.
If you have a couple of horses, we might be able to budget.
Let's get out there and see what we can do.
Okay. Are you coming, Simon?
Hmm? Oh, in a minute.
Whoever you are, I warn you, I'm in the bath here.
Oh, good heavens, I do beg your pardon.
Just let me get dressed and in my right mind and I'll show you around. I suppose... You can't see my towel anywhere, can you?
I can't seem to. Where would it be?
He didn't seem to be able to find it. So I knelt in the bath, parted the green sheets, and put my head through. Seldom have I been more astonished. He had a black beard. It was a trim, pointed beard, rather Elizabethan.
How do you do? Here's your towel. I'll put it down where you can reach it and go right back to the yacht.
I've been looking for you everywhere, Simon.
There's a child in the bath behind those sheets.
Huh? I wonder, could someone bring me my clothes there?
Oh, my God, that arm! It's a green child. What is this, the House of Usher?
I'm not green all over. We've all been dying.
I thought I'd just seen a ghost disappearing behind the tower up on that hill. It was white.
Oh, that'll be my stepmother.
It didn't seem to have any legs.
Well, she probably had her black rubber boots on. She likes communing with nature with no clothes on. She's wonderfully impervious to cold. She's been an artist model, you see. Hello.
You're a larger child than I realized.
Hello.
The two men were, of course, the Cottons of Scotney, on their way there for the first time. There had apparently been some big family row when old Mr. Cotton's son went to America. But now they're both dead, the estate has passed to Simon, the one with the beard. The younger one's name is Neil. Their parents were divorced, and Simon lived with his mother in Boston, while Neil was brought up on his father's ranch in California. That's why they speak so differently. I wonder how it feels to be Simon, arriving by night for the first time at a great house like Scotney, knowing it belongs to you.
Does your family own this castle?
No, you do.
Captain Blast, it's rain!
Oh! This is my husband, James Mortmain.
It turned out Simon had studied Jacob wrestling in college in America and thought it was wonderful. He launched into a sort of eulogy and seemed to attach all sorts of meaning to what Father had written.
Cocoa! Cocoa for our guests! You must excuse my green daughters.
Rose was sitting by the fire, nursing our cat, Abelard, who is nearly the same colour as her hair, and the Cottons kept wandering over to stroke him. They were fascinated by everything.
Just look at that dog asleep on the,
The copper.
Ah! That's the cutest thing I've seen in my life.
Then, when everything was going so swimmingly, Simon Cotton asked the one question I had been praying he wouldn't ask.
And when may we expect the successor to Jacob Wrestling?
Never.
Rose and I went to bed. I was reasonably comfortable, wearing my school coat and the remains of my last dressing gown wrapped round my hot brick. It's Rose's week for the four-poster, mine for the little iron bedstead. Our room is spacious and remarkably empty. All the good furniture has been sold. Topaz was in bed, waiting for Father and playing her lute. I like the idea, but not the noise. Rose, I could tell, was very excited. She got all of her clothes out and draped them over Miss Blossom, which is what we call the old dressmaker's dummy in our room. She has a most opulent figure, with a wire skirt round her one leg. We imagine her to be a woman of the world, perhaps a barmaid in her youth.
I want to see what I've got and whether any of them are better than I remember. Oh, dear. I'm afraid they're not.
Rose, we're working it up too much. Mm. You couldn't marry that man with the beard. What do you think, Miss Blossom? Sometimes I make Miss Blossom talk. I can never think of the sort of things she says unless I pretend she is really saying them.
Well, it's a start, girlies. There's no denying that. Now, you just make the best of yourselves. Of course, all these old clothes you've draped over me won't help you much. But wash your hair and keep your hands nice. That green stuff on them's funny for once, but the joke's over. And now, you'd better think of your complexions and get some beauty sleep.
It's a pity that Simon is the heir, because I'm sure Rose thinks the beard is disgusting. But perhaps we can get it off. Am I really admitting that my sister is determined to marry a man she has seen only once and doesn't much like the look of? Something awful has happened. So awful that I can hardly bear to write. Oh, how could they? How could they? They had come back, as we had hoped. I didn't go down. I've got a huge hole in my stocking and my gym dress is all dusty from the chaff. They had no idea I was up here, sitting on the chaff in the barn, writing my journal.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, Simon, you're lucky to get away with your life.
Extraordinary, wasn't it? She didn't give that impression at all last night. Oh, what a wonderful place. But hellishly uncomfortable. Mm. And they obviously haven't a cent. I suppose one can't blame the poor girl.
One can blame her for being so darned obvious.
The stepmother seems quite pleasant. She looked about as uncomfortable as I felt. How that girl embarrassed me.
She was so affected. If she'd had a fan, she'd have tapped you with it and said, "Fie, fie." And the way she fluttered her eyelids. Mm. It might all have been very fetching 100 years ago. We shall have to drop them, Simon. If we don't, she may put you in a very awkward position.
I suppose so.
Well, pity we didn't see the child again. She was a cute kid.
A bit consciously naive, don't you think? I shall feel worse dropping the old man. I'd rather hoped I could help him. But I don't suppose there's much one can do if he's a hopeless drunk.
Oh, I could kill them. When Father doesn't even get enough to eat, let alone any strong drink. And he isn't an old man. He's not yet 50. Oh, I must go in. Oh, poor Rose. She got it all out of books. We've never known any modern woman except Topaz, and Rose would never dream of copying her. Oh, I mustn't tell her. At first, only Topaz and I were miserable. Rose's exuberance lasted 10 days. Then she began to feel something else ought to happen. The Cottons' mother had arrived from America, and I persuaded her this must have kept her sons busy. Then the blow fell. Miss Marcy came with all the Scotney news.
The vicar's been asked to lunch, and others too.
I gather invitations are being broadcast. It appears to be quite a distinction not to be asked to Scotney.
Oh.
I'm sorry. But you know what it is, don't you? It's the rent. They're kind enough, but they don't want to get involved with us.
Are you awake?
Ask Miss Blossom what went wrong, Cassandra.
She says she doesn't know.
I expect it's because we're so poor. I was nice to them, really I was.
Perhaps you were too nice, dearie.
But I wasn't. I was charming, but I was
Oh, capricious, contradictory. Isn't that what men like?
You just be natural, girlie. How much did you really like them, Rose?
I don't know. But I know I don't like them now.
But what we didn't know then was that our fortunes were already on the mend. For that was the very day Father's Aunt Millicent died.
She hasn't left anything to your father because she was so angry with him for marrying me. But she's left you two all her clothes.
Her clothes?
Well, at least we've been left something.
Cassandra, she was 74. And think how she dressed. Just imagine, if Father hadn't married Topaz, we might be rolling in wealth by now.
I'd rather have Topaz any day.
Thank you, darling. The lawyers have written saying you should go to London and pack what you want. They'll pay your expenses.
If it'd be heaven to go to London.
What will we wear?
Let's wear our white suits.
We could. It'd be all right if it was midsummer. But in April...
Oh, it was the most glorious morning. I suppose the best kind of spring morning God has to offer. It helps one to believe in him. Stephen saw us off and kept begging me to be careful of the traffic. He even ran along with the train to remind me. Then he stood, waving, smiling, a bit wistful looking. It struck me that never has he been to London.
Cassandra, our suits look peculiar here. People are staring.
It's because they admire them.
We look conspicuous.
Look, let's find our way by bus and save the taxi money. Look, there's one coming. Run to the stop.
We must be the only girls in London wearing white.
Come on!
Up on, Snowdrops!
No, Cassandra!
Taxi!
The solicitor's clerk came to see we were all right, while we were packing up all those eccentric old dead clothes in Aunt Millicent's flat in Chelsea, and then told us there were furs for us to pick up from the department store where they were being stored. So we did. There were two very long coats, one black and shaggy, and the other smoothish and brown. Whatever animals were they?
This one is beaver, and the jacket is sealskin. The rug, I'm not sure.
It looks like a collie dog. You try on the shaggy one, Rose. Goodness, you look like a bear.
It is bear. I think it must have been a coachman's coat.
Something in the pocket. Here. Meet Madam's train at 1:20. Miss Millie to dancing class at 3:00. The young ladies to the Grange at 6:00.
These must have been her mother's. Orphans. These belong to our great-grandmother. They must be valuable.
I don't think you could sell them for much. We treat furs so differently now. Oh, this beaver weighs a ton.
Rose, there are seats here. Oh. We collapsed into our seats with the furs. At King's Crypt, we had to change trains onto the little local line. And at Little Limping, the stop before Scotney, I pulled down the window and looked out.
Oh, my God!
What is it?
It's him!
Who?
Simon Cotton!
Get back!
I had 10 minutes to think in before we got to Scotney. Should I tell Rose what the Cottons had said about her?
Let's be distant with them.
Distant? Do you think I intend to speak to them after they've ignored us?
We have to say good evening coldly and sweep on with dignity.
I couldn't do anything with dignity in a stupid white suit and laden with furs like hearthrugs. Let's jump out of the train as it stops and dash away before they see us.
We can't dash away without our trunks. I tell you what, we'll get out on the wrong side of the train and walk along the line to the guard's van. By the time we get there, they'll be out of the station.
I suppose it could work. All right, let's keep the furs on so we'll not be seen in the dark.
I hope another train doesn't come along in the other direction.
They come so slowly.
Looks as though we'll have to get the trunks off ourselves. It's so dark, I can't see a thing. Where are they?
Oh, what's this?
Oh, good heavens! Before us stood an enormous crate, the label just readable under the feeble little gas mantle. It said, Cotton, Scotney, Suffolk. The next minute...
It's in here, sir.
Is there anyone who can help us off with the order?
Quick, get behind the trunks.
Oh, my God! There's an animal in there.
Oh, no.
The door closed.
I can't see a thing. What happened? It's nothing but gaslight.
It's
rubbish.
It's sitting right there in the corner.
Why would he slam the doors on us? No, it's something else.
Right.
Shut up and listen.
I tell you, I'm certain. And tell Mother to stay inside with the door shut.
Right. Oh, right. You're right, sir.
Of course I'm right. Haven't I said them in Yellowstone Park?
Rose, you've been mistaken for a bear.
The rest of the night was a farce. Rose ran for it, chased by Neil Cotton and the guard, who shouted to the engine driver. As I jumped down on the track after Rose, I remembered there was a circus at King's Crypt. Of course. The beam of a torch shone down on my sister. She had got beyond the end of the platform and was scrambling up the embankment. And as she was on all fours, she really did look exactly like a bear. There was a thump as someone jumped down on the line. Then Stephen crossed the beam of the torch. And then there was Neil, walking into the light, carrying Rose in her white suit. Simon Cotton and Stephen were a few steps behind.
Stand back, please. She's had a dreadful shock.
Rose!
She's all right, but we want to get her to our car.
The bear, sir!
Dead. My brother killed it.
And he really thought Neil had. Then he believed Neil when he said it had fallen in the river and was carried away by the current. You see, when Neil came at me with a pitchfork, I screamed and suddenly he got the hang of the thing. Cassandra.
Yes.
I slapped Neil Cotton's face.
Why?
He caught up with me and grabbed me by the arm and asked why I was running away. And I said, because I don't want to meet you or your brother either. You can both go to hell. And I hit him across the face.
Rose!
I told him he'd made me the laughing stock of the neighbourhood. And he said, wait, be quiet. And then he told Simon to pretend there really had been a bear, even to their mother. He said they must leave me to tell my story in my own way. Then they brought me home and you came with Stephen. How much did he tell you?
He just said, oh, it was dreadful, dreadful. Miss Rose had better tell you herself. I'm saying nothing. Did Neil make him promise to pretend too? What's the mother like?
Yes, beautiful. And never stops talking. Father will want to brain her with a brick.
If he ever meets her.
He'll meet her all right. We shall be seeing quite a lot of the Cottons now.
Here, Rosie. Have you got something up your sleeve, you naughty girl?
If I have, it's staying there. You and Miss Blossom go to sleep.
They're coming! I've seen their car from Belmont on the Godsend Road.
So soon. Get Mortmain, Cassandra. Now, Rose, for pity's sake, don't be challenging. Your looks will do the challenging if you give them the chance. Ah, here he is.
Those young men are driving up the lane. I'm glad you're still on the young side to be marketed, Cassandra. I'll go and meet them.
Mrs. Cotton's with them.
Oh. My wife, Mrs. Cotton.
Oh, how do you do?
My younger daughter, Cassandra, and, of course, Rose, my elder.
Oh, you poor girl. I do hope you've recovered from your shock. I heard your father lecture in America, you know, and there's so much I want to ask you, Mr. Mortmain, because Jacob Wrestling is... Oh, my, will you look at those swamps?
My mother made us go over to compensate the circus owner this morning. He didn't have any bears at all, but he said he'd be delighted to back us up. I tried to buy one of his lions.
What did you want a lion for?
Well, they were kind of cute.
We were hoping you'd all dine with us at Scotney one night next week.
Is Cassandra old enough for dinner parties?
Oh, you bet she is.
Mortmain, you deserve a medal.
For talking to Mrs. Cotton, I enjoyed it. I got used to the vitality of American women when I was over there.
Do they all talk as much as that?
She's a type I met. It goes to lectures. They're rather like punch balls. You buffet them, they buffet you. And on the whole, the result's most stimulating.
Unless they knock you out altogether.
She seemed to know a lot about Jacob Wrestling.
Perhaps you'd find it stimulating if I talked as much as that.
What did you... think of Rose's manner today?
Quieter, though she was still making eyes. But anyway, it doesn't matter now.
What do you mean?
Well, Simon Cotton's attracted. Really attracted. Once that happens, a girl can be as silly as she likes, and he'll think it's fetching.
Is Neil attracted too?
I doubt it. I saw him give her a very shrewd look. Oh, how are we going to dress her, Cassandra?
Do you want her to marry Simon Topaz?
I want her to have the chance.
Well, I hope we're on our way to Shepley.
Oh, God, that would be absolutely marvelous.
We are on our way to Scotney. Neil arranged for their car to collect us. And here we are, being driven by a uniformed chauffeur. I am feeling rather frail and luxurious. I'm wondering how all the others are feeling. Father looks so handsome in his evening clothes. And Topaz, with her silvery hair hanging down her back and at its cleanest, wearing her Grecian grey cloud of a dress, looks just like the angel of death. And, of course, Rose.
So tell me, Mr. Mortmain, do. How long is it since you have published anything?
A good 12 years.
You've thought it best to lie fallow. But it's been long enough, don't you think?
I've given up writing, Mrs. Cotton. And now let's talk of something interesting.
I warn you, Mr. Mortmain, I'm quite unsnubbable. When a writer so potentially great as you keeps silent so long, it's somebody's duty to find out the reason.
Tell me, are you unique? Or has the American clubwoman become more menacing since my day?
Oh, we must cure you of this habit of generalizing about America on the strength of 2 short lecture tours.
Oh, talk to the vicar. Give me a rest.
But I shall return to the attack.
Well,
what makes this house so
interesting? It's a miniature great house.
I told you he was so interesting. What did you and Neil talk about? Amongst other things, he said you look very pretty.
Oh, what else?
Oh, about America, mostly. His father's ranch, where he lived until he joined Mrs. Cotton and Simon. He'd like to have a ranch himself one day if he could afford it.
What? Cows and things? But aren't they very rich?
I don't suppose Neil is. And it probably takes all Simon's money keeping this place up. Come on, we'd better talk to Mrs. Fox Cotton. She's sitting alone.
I don't care for her.
Still, her husband's fascinated by Topaz. Did you hear him ask Simon if the exquisite Lady Grey was the Topaz of Mac Morris's picture in the Tate Gallery?
Is that book interesting, Mrs. Fox Cotton?
Do you mind? I want to finish it before we go back to London tomorrow.
Oh, what is it?
It's no book for little girls.
It's no book for little vicars.
Ah, yes, Simon. Did you know there's a portrait here with a look of you?
Really?
Come with me.
Let's dance in the hall. Victrola's down there.
We'll be one man short. Yes.
Oh, I'll watch. I don't know any modern dances.
Oh, what do you know? Sarabands, Corans, Pavans?
Well, Mother taught us waltzes and polkas when we were little.
Oh, I'll teach it.
Well, there you go, then.
Let the child watch if she wants to.
Come on, Cassandra.
Dance this with me.
I sat on the top step of the stairs and watched them. I must say, Mrs. Fox Cotton danced beautifully, though she seemed to be lying on Neil's chest. Rose looked lovely, but she kept missing the steps. I leaned against the carved banisters and listened and watched and felt soft, beautiful. And as if a great many men might very easily be in love with me, and I might very easily be in love with them. It was a pleasant, curious feeling in my solar plexus. And I was staring down at a big bowl of white tulips against the uncurtained window in a hazy sort of way, when all of a sudden I went quite cold with shock. There were 2 faces floating in the black glass of the window. The next instant, they were gone.
Oh, did you see that? Mm-hmm. 2 of the villagers standing in again.
Oh,
well, what does it matter? Let them watch.
No, I'll just ask them not to, if I can catch them. It startled Mother the other night.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Don't catch them, please.
Good heavens, I'm not going to hurt them. Anyone there? They're behind the cedar.
Say you couldn't find them. It's Thomas and Stephen. What? They must have cycled over. I expect they hanged to see the fun.
Thomas! Stephen! Where are you? Am
on, talk to us.
What, my old friend Stephen?
Yes, behind the cedar.
Any bears aboard tonight?
We had a squint at you at dinner.
Oh, oh. Come on, let's come inside.
Yes, come on in. How long have you been out here?
Here we are.
I do apologize for them. They ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Don't mind your great Aunt Rose, boys. Come in, we'll go raid the icebox.
Who's that boy? Tall, fair one.
Two more points,
oh, Stephen. Oh, he lives with us.
I must photograph him. I must photograph his head.
Not at this time of night.
Of course not, you silly child. He must come up to London. He must come to my studio in St. John's Wood. I'll pay his fare and give him 2 guineas. He's exactly what I've been looking for months. You will come, won't you? What's your name? Stephen.
No, thank you, ma'am. I'd be embarrassed.
3 guineas.
What? Just for one day?
5 guineas if you'll come next Sunday.
Oh, come on, Cassandra. Come and dance.
Can't you sleep? I wish I knew more about men. I wish I knew the clever way to behave.
Oh, Rose. Have you thought what marriage really means?
If I could just get used to the beard.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather have Neil? He's so very kind and he's got such a nice, clean face.
Oh, Neil. No, you can have Neil. If only I could get Simon to shave. Anyway, what does it matter? I'd marry him even if I hated him.
Oh, hello. Could you pass me the place?
Cassandra, did you dance with them last night?
I tried once with Neil.
You'd never do it like that one who calls herself leader, would you? I'd be ashamed.
Mrs. Fox Cotton. She does rather drape herself over her partners, doesn't she? You aren't going to let her photograph you, are you?
I might.
But surely you'd hate it, Stephen.
Might be worth hating it to earn 5 guineas. 5 guineas would be almost enough for...
Enough for what?
Oh, for lots of things. 5 guineas is more than I can save in a year.
But you were so sure you wouldn't last night.
Perhaps I will. Perhaps I won't.
I'm damned if you're going to sit for Leader Fox Cotton.
When I came in with the washing basket, I found Topaz very fretful because she couldn't find Father. She'd been up to the gatehouse, but he hadn't eaten his lunch, and she said there was no sign of him. He turned up about 9 o'clock and said he had bicycled over to Scotney. And the next morning, Father came down to breakfast in his best dark suit that he hasn't worn for years.
Maudney, what on earth?
I'm going up to London.
What for?
Business.
Must you polish your shoes on the curtains, Father?
Don't worry him. Do you think he's going to see her? Mrs. Cotton?
Is there no place a man in a dark suit can sit in this house? Dog's hairs everywhere.
Not unless you dye Eloise black. Look, stand still. I'll brush you down there.
Just have something before you go, Mortmain.
Don't fuss.
That's my bicycle, Father.
Well, mine's got a flat tire.
Well, when will you be back?
I have the faintest idea.
I escaped to Belmont, and as I settled myself down on the mound, I saw Rose going up the lane towards Godsend Village. I lay back, enjoying the heat of the sun, and closed my eyes. Gradually, I slid into imagining Rose married to Simon. I gave her a lovely wedding, and got to where she was alone with Simon at a Paris hotel. He was looking at her the way he did at dinner when he raised his glass to her. I opened my eyes.
Did I startle you? Oh, I'm sorry to have missed your sister.
We've been in London, but it seemed a waste not to be here in this weather. Oh, what is it about the English countryside, Why is the beauty so much more than visual? Why does it touch one so? Well, anyway, after next week, Neil and I will be back here for some time.
Oh?
Mother's absorbed in her new apartment. Lita and Aubrey are helping her to choose the furniture. Oh,
That reminds me.
What's this?
I ought to have left it at the castle. It's for that nice boy, Stephen. His fare to London from Lita.
I'll give it to him.
I wonder what he'll make of Lita. She wants to pose him with some casts of Greek sculpture.
Oh, no.
She'll have him in a tunic if he's not too careful. Or out of it. Oh. How nice it is lying on the grass here. You don't like it, do you?
Like what?
My beard.
Well, would it be rude to ask why you do wear it?
Well, I grew it when I was 22, for a bet. I think I felt that in a Wall Street office, a beard kept me in touch with literature.
Do you think you'll ever get rid of it?
Well, does your sister hate it?
Well, you must ask her yourself.
Well, Neil's picking me up at the Godsend Inn at 12:15. This afternoon I have to see the land agent. Be a nice companionable child and walk to the village with me.
Oh.
Look, Cassandra, this is awkward, but could you make your father understand that I don't mind at all about the rent? I'd like him to know that I'm honored to feel that he's my tenant.
More of a guest than a tenant. But yes, I'll tell Father.
Do it tactfully, won't you? Don't let me sound gracious and patronizing.
But I do think you're gracious and patronizing. The right kind of patron. Perhaps he'll dedicate his next book to you as its only begetter.
Oh, what a nice child you are.
Not too consciously naive?
What do you mean? Were you up there in the barn? I'm terribly ashamed.
It did me a lot of good.
That wasn't all you heard, was it?
Come on, we'll be late. We walked into Godsend talking about England and New England in America and crossed the green to find Rose and Neil sitting at a bench outside the Keys Inn with some stone bottles of ginger beer before them. Rose, in her very oldest, washed-out blue cotton dress, just right for sitting outside an inn. Behind her, a branch of chestnut and a strand of her bright hair caught across a leaf.
Is that branch worrying you? Would you like to change places?
Fine.
I hope you wouldn't, because your hair looks so nice against the leaves.
Thanks, Simon.
The windows of the schoolhouse were open. Miss Marcy began a singing class. The children's voices came floating out. I can't imagine ever feeling happier than I did for those moments. And while I was telling myself so, Simon said,
"Did anything as beautiful as this ever happen before?"
Come on, hop in. We'll run the girls home.
Neil, don't you think this is beautiful?
Pretty as a picture. Kind you get on jigsaw puzzles.
You're hopeless. After that lunch, we saw nothing of the Cottons for 2 weeks, and I came to believe Neil really did dislike Rose. But anyway, something happened to put the Cottons right out of my head. On Sunday, when I came down to breakfast, Topaz told me,
"Stephen's gone to London."
Oh, I hate that Fox Cotton woman.
Their interest may be only professional, though I doubt it.
Do you mean she might make love to him?
Well, somebody will, sooner or later. I'd rather it was some nice girl in the village. But you mustn't be a dog in the manger, Cassandra.
I shouldn't mind if it's someone good enough for him.
Doesn't he attract you at all? At your age, I couldn't have resisted him for a minute. But then I've promised your father not to put ideas into your head about Stephen.
Stephen didn't come home till late that evening.
Well, how did you get on? What was she like?
She was very nice. Quite different. Very businesslike in trousers. Like a man. She did me next to some broken bits of statues. I had lunch with Mr. and Mrs. Foxcotton, and you wouldn't believe their house. The carpets feel like moss, and the hall's got a black marble floor. Mr. Foxcotton asked to be remembered to you, Mrs. Mortmain, ma'am.
Thank you.
I wanted to get you a present, Cassandra. But all I could get was some chocolate from a slot machine on the station platform. And I don't suppose it's special London chocolate. I better go and wash for my supper.
I misjudged the woman.
He was too tired to eat much. But after he'd gone to bed, I thought of him falling asleep in his little Spartan room here. It was odd to think he'd been seeing things I had never seen. It made him separate somehow, much more grown up.
Hello?
What are you doing up there?
I'm writing. Father's in London today.
Funny place to choose.
The child writes anywhere and everywhere.
I'll come down.
By the time I got there, it was too late to warn Rose they were coming, and they were all talking about a picnic. We drove to the sea, and Neil cooked steak over a fire on the shore. He was even quite nice to Rose that day, and she was her very best. The sea and the fun of cooking the steak changed her into a gloriously real person again. She even slid down sandhills on her stomach. Late in the afternoon, when she had been specially tomboyish, Simon said to Neil,
"Did you ever see such a change in a girl?"
"No, it's quite an improvement."
"Do you think it's an improvement, Simon?"
"Shall we say, it's perfect..."
"Do you think it's an improvement, Simon?"
"Shall we say, it's perfect for the sea and the sunlight, and the other rose is perfect for candlelight. And perhaps what's most perfect of all is to find there are several roses."
"Thank you, Simon."
"Time to pack up."
When we got home, we found Father was back, having travelled on the train with Mrs. Cotton. And Topaz was furious with him because he had invited her to come over for dinner. As she said, there was no food except a ham they themselves had sent over from Scotney. And we don't now have a stick of dining room furniture. After dinner, the four of us took the lantern and went on a tour of the castle. I felt the more romantic I could make it for Rose, the better. She looked wonderful in Topaz's black dress. We went up on the gatehouse tower, and Simon was certainly in a romantic mood.
"This is amazing. How tall and black Belmont Tower looks against the starry sky."
"Isn't there some way you can leave us alone together? I'll manage something."
"Oh, is this your room?"
"Yes."
"Who sleeps in the four-poster?"
"Rose." Actually, it was my week, but it sounded more romantic for Rose.
"Hey, who's this?"
"Oh, that's Miss Blossom."
"Just my type of girl."
"Neil, how would you like to bathe?"
"Love it." "What, bathe tonight?"
"Yes, it could be fun. Lend Neil your bathing shorts." I'm afraid there's only one pair, Simon. Rose mustn't bathe because she gets chills."
"We'll watch from the window."
"What's the game? Don't you know the water in the moat will be icy? And it's you who gets the chill."
"I'll explain later. You'd better change in the bathroom, Neil, and go down the tower steps. I'll meet you at the moat."
"Okay."
We left Simon and Rose sitting on the window seat looking splendidly settled. And only while I was changing did I realize what I had let myself in for. I went down the kitchen stairs like an Eskimo going to his frozen hell. I sat, waiting for Neil, on a plank bridge, keeping my feet well above the water. The moon looked like a dazzling circle of tin. I never saw a moon so hard before. And the water was black and silver and gold under the moon and the candlelit windows. Neil stepped from lantern light in the doorway into moonlight, looking very tall.
Oh, gosh, it was cold.
I wonder if I ought to bathe, really, after such a heavy dinner.
Oh, you don't get away with that. I'll pull you in.
Oh, please, God, dear God, I'm doing this for my sister.
It was like being skinned with icy knives.
I want to die. I
Oh, say, are you all right?
Oh, just...
Oh, you'll get used to it.
And he was right. After a while, it didn't feel quite so bad. By the time we had swum as far as the drawing room, I was beginning to enjoy it. There was no sign of Rose and Simon at the window above. I hoped they were too engrossed to look out. We swam through a patch of moonlight, and then, after we turned the corner to the front of the castle, there was no more golden light from the windows. Nothing but moonlight. We swam on our backs, looking up at the sheer, unbroken walls.
There. We've made the complete circuit. Here, give me your hand.
Thank you.
Let's sit here for a moment. Oh, the kitchen wall feels nice and warm to my back.
What with the moonlight, the music, the scent of the stocks, and having swum round a 600-year-old moat, it seemed a waste we weren't in love with each other. Neil looked wonderful, with brilliant green duckweed on his head. But he was shivering, and I had to run upstairs to find my towel and fold it and pretend it was a clean one, because we have no spare towels. I pushed open the door of the tower. Simon and Rose were standing in each other's arms. Simon turned, and his beard was gone. For a moment, I didn't think it was Simon.
Is it all right by you if Rose marries me?
Rose! Rose! Oh, Simon! We're engaged!
My child, you're like ice.
How do you like Simon without his beard?
Hurry up and change out of that swimsuit.
Well, I must take Neil a towel first and his clothes. Oh, he's wonderful. He looks wonderful.
Why, I thought you'd forgotten me.
Oh, isn't it splendid?
Huh?
Rose and Simon are engaged. You don't look exactly pleased.
Pleased? Clear out and let me get dressed.
Neil, please, why do you hate Rose so?
Because she's a gold digger, and you know it, Cassandra.
I do not. How dare you say things like that?
Can you honestly tell me she isn't marrying Simon for his money?
Of course I can.
You darn little liar. And I thought you were such a nice, honest kid. Did you take me bathing deliberately?
Yes, I did. And I'm glad I did. You mind your own business, Neil Cotton.
Get the hell out of here!
Later, when everyone had been told, including Mrs. Cotton and Father, and they had all been kind and congratulated Simon and Rose, and they were leaving, Neil came up to me.
Make it up?
I don't think I'm keen to. You called me a liar.
Suppose I apologize. Suppose I add I wouldn't blame you for lying, if you did, and that I admire you for defending Rose. Don't say anything. But if you forgive me, just squeeze my hand. Good. Maybe she really has fallen for him. Why not? Any girl in her senses would, I guess. That was a darn good bathe, anyhow. Bye!
Goodbye!
Bye!
Bye!
Rose. Tell me.
I just had to see him without that beard, Cassandra. I'd worked up a horror about it. I went close to him and looked up and said, "You've got such a nice mouth. Why hide it?" And I traced the outline of his lips with my finger. Then he tried to kiss me, but I dodged and said, "No, not while you've got that beard." And he said, "Will you if I shave it?" I said, "I can't tell till it's off." We were laughing all the time, but there was a queer, exciting feeling, and I had to keep stopping him from kissing me. He had an awful job with the shave, and I suddenly wished I'd never made him start. He was such a sight after he chopped off the long hair with the scissors. I bet I looked horrified because he shouted, go away, stop watching me. I kept thinking, please, God, without getting any further. It seemed ages before Simon dried his face and turned round and said, "Now you know the worst," in a funny, rueful sort of voice. He looked humble and touching somehow. And so handsome. He's handsome now, isn't he, Cassandra?
Oh, yes, very. What happened next?
I said, "I like you 1,000 times better. Thank you very, very much for doing it for me." And then he asked me to marry him. But I still didn't know. I didn't know whether I loved him until he kissed me. And then, oh, it was wonderful. As wonderful as...
Wonderful as what?
Oh, heavens, I can't describe it. It was all right, anyway. I'm in love and terribly happy. And I'm going to make things splendid for you two. You'll come and stay with us, and perhaps you'll marry Neil.
I thought you hated him.
I don't hate anyone tonight. Oh, the relief, finding I'm in love with Simon.
Supposing you hadn't found out. Just before he kissed me, I said to myself,
you'll marry him anyway, my girl. And you know what made me say it? It was that thin, old frayed towel I'd had to lend him for the shave. Not a spare towel in this house.
Don't I know it?
I won't live like that. I won't. I won't.
You'll be able to have all the towels you want now. Ever such congratulations, Rosie dear.
Dear Neil, I hope you're having a nice time in London. I'm sure you will be glad to know Rose really is in love with Simon. When I talked to you, I was afraid she might not be, so you were justified in calling me a liar, but I am not one now. Rose told me herself, and she is very truthful. She admitted honestly that she would have married him even if she had not been in love. I don't quite believe that, but anyway, please do not count it against her, as she is a girl who finds poverty very hard to bear, and she has been bearing it for years. With love, from your future sister-in-law. Rose wrote me such a long letter from Mrs. Cotton's flat in London. It went on for pages. Getting a trousseau seemed very hard work, and Mrs. Cotton was spending the earth on her. The prices were fabulous. Quite plain dresses for £25. She said they had dined at the Fox Cottons, and she had seen Stephen's photographs. He looked like all the Greek gods rolled into one, and Leda was sure he would get a job on the pictures. And it was so wonderful that she could be in love with Simon as well as everything else. She added a P.S.
P.S. I have a bathroom all to myself, and there are clean peach-coloured towels every single day. Whenever I feel lonely, I go and sit in there till I cheer up.
It is Midsummer Eve, and I am quite by myself. When Father told me he was off to London, and Thomas went to stay with his friend Harry, Stephen left too, to spend the night at the Fox Cottons, and I realized I would be alone tonight. I had a dismayed, deserted feeling, but once I got used to the idea, I positively liked it. I swam in the moat, and then lay in the sun with no clothes, on top of our bedroom tower. It was beautifully private. As I lay there, warmth and light fell round me like a great cape. The heat of the sun felt like enormous hands pressing gently on me, and the flutter of the air was like delicate fingers. Then it was time to collect twigs for the fire and gather flowers for the midsummer rites. We first held the rites when I was 9, but Rose has outgrown them now, though she sometimes comes out for the garland gathering. The peace tonight is so great that it seems like a soft, thick substance wrapped closely round me as I watch the sun sink. Not a breath of wind, and the moon looks like masses of luminous snow as the blue deepens around her. Once the fire is blazing, the countryside fades into the dusk. I'm sorry to let the quiet fields go. All my thoughts seem drawn into the fire. And then, far off in the forgotten dusk, someone calls my name.
Cassandra! Cassandra!
Here I am! Who is it? Is it Neil?
No, it's me.
Simon.
I've been working at Scotney with the agent. Then I thought I'd call. There are no lights in the castle.
Oh, they're all away. Father's in London.
Oh, like sardines in Mother's apartment. He'll have to sleep in my room.
How's Rose?
Oh, fine. She sent her love, of course. So did Topaz. Oh, is this the vicar's port Rose told me about in this medicine bottle?
Yes, he gives me a little every year.
Oh. Do we drink it or make a libation?
We?
I'm going to celebrate, too. Ah, what are the herbs for?
Oh, we burn them. They're a charm against witchcraft.
Uh-huh. What's the white stuff?
Oh, that's salt. To ward off bad luck. Turns the flames a lovely blue.
Oh. And the cake?
Well, we show that to the fire before we eat it.
Then we drink wine and throw a few drops into the flames.
And then you dance round the fire?
No, I'm too old for that.
Oh, not on your life, you're not. I'll dance with you.
Oh, Simon. Oh, my little one.
What now?
Oh, there's nothing more. Except I usually sit still while the flames die down and try to think myself back into the past.
I'll never get used to the miracle of the long English twilight. Oh, and look at that great carpet of mist creeping up.
Oh, yes.
You can just about make out the castle towers, and that's all. Mm. Oh, could anyone paint that? Debussy could have done it in music. Are you fond of him?
I'm afraid I've never heard a note.
Oh, surely. Not on records or the radio.
We haven't got a wireless, Simon, nor a gramophone.
I don't believe you. Good heavens. What? I tell you what. At Scotney, we've a new machine that changes its own records.
No.
Why don't I drive you over to hear it now? And we'll have some supper, or you can. I've eaten. Come on. This grass is getting very damp.
Oh, Simon. Thank you.
I'll just have a look in the albums here and see what we've got. Ah. Here we are. I'll try Clair de Lune on you. Just one candle, so you can still see the fountains while you listen to the Debussy. They go well together. This one you can hear the drowned cathedral rise with its bells ringing, then sink into the sea again. Now you know why I said Debussy could have composed the castle in the mist.
Yes. I hadn't realized you'd turned the pavilion into such a wonderful music room. It's a beautiful piano.
Yes, that's just come. It's a pity Rose doesn't like music.
Oh, but she does.
Hmm?
She plays much better than I do. She sings, too.
Hmm. I took her to a concert, and she looked quite wretched with boredom. Ah, here's your supper. Thank you, Graves. Miss Mortmain will have a glass of wine.
Thank you.
And you can light all the candles now, if you will. Thank you. There's lemonade if you don't like the wine.
Oh, but I do. I feel as though I'm back in the 18th century. It's all so beautiful.
I'm determined not to have electricity in here.
Tell me about Rose.
Well, she's admired everywhere. Topaz, too. And my mother's a pretty good looker, so when the three of them go out together, it's quite something.
Well, they need me to bring the average down.
Oh, don't fish, Cassandra. You're far prettier than any girl who's so intelligent has a right to be. As a matter of fact, you're very pretty indeed.
I think I'm a bit better looking when Rose isn't around.
Well, you're certainly very pretty tonight.
Thank you.
Here, I'll peel your peach for you.
Cool.
This? Lover, I believe. Do you want to dance once? Then I must take you home.
Oh,
Thank you, Cassandra.
Thank you, too. It was lovely.
You astonishing child.
What do you mean?
Only that you kiss very nicely. You must have had quite a lot of practice.
I have never kissed any man in my life before. Oh.
Cassandra, stop!
My dear, I'm so sorry. I ought to have known that you'd mind.
Of course I didn't mind.
It was a sudden impulse, you see, because you've been so sweet all evening, and because I'd enjoyed the dance, and because I like you very much.
And because you were missing Rose, perhaps?
No, I'm damned if I'll pass that. That'd be an insult to both of you. No, it was a kiss in your own right, my child.
Anyway, we're making too much of it. Forgive me. Now, may I hear the Bach record before I go home?
Very well. We'll play it while I put the candles out.
On the way home, I found it quite easy to carry on a casual conversation. It was as if my real feelings were down fathoms deep in my mind, and what we said was just a feathery surface spray.
Well, I've managed to get Cinderella home by midnight. Am I really forgiven?
Of course. I had a lovely evening. Thank you. Heavens, what a prig you'll think me.
I promise you I won't. I think you're everything that's nice.
And the next second, the door had closed behind him. From the castle walls, I watched the lights of his car travel slowly along the lane, and even after they had vanished, I watched on in a kind of daze, barely conscious of anything but the moving car. Only when I lay down in darkness did I at last let my thoughts flow into my mind, and with them came nothing but happiness. Just to be in love seemed the most blissful luxury I had ever known. I thought then that true loving can never know anything but happiness, and for a moment I felt that I had discovered a great truth. But then I caught sight of Miss Blossom's silhouette, and she spoke.
Well, you just hang on to that comforting bit of high-thinking, Ducky, because you're going to need it.
Then the weather broke, and everything changed with it.
Come on, darling. You're all wet. Oh, I'll light the fire for you.
Oh, hello, Stephen. Oh, you're drenched, too. How'd it go?
She put me in a Greek tunic this time. I felt stupid in it.
Has she shown you the photographs?
Oh, yes.
Well, when am I going to see them? Didn't she give you any?
She told me I could take some away, but I didn't like to. They're so large and, well, flattering. I'll ask next time if you really want to see them.
You're going again, then?
Yes, but for something different. It's too silly to talk about.
Is it to do with wanting you to go on the pictures?
There was a man came to dinner last night. They got me to read a piece aloud. I'm supposed to go and be tested. That's what they call it. Only I don't know I'll do it.
But of course you must, Stephen.
Do you want me to? Would you like it if I acted?
Why, it would be splendid. Of course I'd like it.
Then I'll try. They said they could teach me.
Well, it's most exciting. Perhaps you'll go to Hollywood. Oh,
I don't think I should count on that.
By the way, Simon particularly asked to be remembered to you.
Oh.
He said you entertained him very nicely.
Where did you sleep once he got back?
I stayed on in his room. He went to Neil's Hotel. Very obliging of him. Simon has a charming nature, unfortunately.
Why unfortunately?
Rose takes advantage of it. But then, no man ought to be as much in love as Simon is. It makes one resent the whole female sex.
I don't see why it should, considering Rose is in love with him.
Is she? She's damned unresponsive. and too obviously sure of her power over him. Being so much in love puts a man at a disadvantage.
Everything Father was saying about Simon's feelings for Rose was such agony that I suddenly knew it wasn't only the wonderful luxury of being in love that had been buoying me up. Deep down, in some vague, mixed way, I had been letting myself hope that he didn't really care for her, that it was me he loved, and that kissing me would have made him realize it. You're a fool, and worse, I told myself. You're a would-be thief. Stephen!
Oh, Lily, he was embarrassed about being thanked. It's your birthday present. Can we play it over breakfast?
Oh, look! He's laid the breakfast for me and put flowers on the table.
Here's my present. It's a book on astronomy, but I haven't wrapped it up because I'm just in the middle of it.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, how wireless.
It's from Stephen for my birthday.
I suppose you wouldn't care to lend it to me for an hour or so. I dare say Topaz has got you a present from me.
Which, of course, she had. The postman came with no less than 5 parcels.
Cassandra, look at all these parcels.
Oh, what a beautiful dressing gown from Topaz. Oh, and Shakespeare from you, Father. That's kind of her. She knows how you hate lending me yours. Good heavens! Rosa sent me a nightgown. I've never seen anything like it. Oh, look. Oh, stockings from Mrs. Cotton. 6 pairs. Silk.
I'll unwrap this one. Oh, chocolates. An enormous box from Neil. What are you looking for? Look, there's nothing else, Cassandra. Haven't you got enough?
I just thought there might be something from Simon, that's all.
Cassandra, there's another package. It's a big crate. Come out.
Oh, I can't imagine. Oh, heavens.
Good God, what have we got?
A great fat suitcase with a handle.
Oh, great.
What on earth? What's a wireless and a gramophone combined?
Oh, it's beautiful. Look, look, there's a record case to match, all in blue shiny linen. And it is from Simon.
What does he say?
He says, it's just about how he's sending me a record he knows I like too.
Many, many happy returns. I'll be seeing you soon. Love from Simon.
Has it occurred to you, Cassandra, what this thing is going to do to your swain?
But yours has a real wood case, Stephen, with such a beautiful high polish. And the wireless part of Simon's isn't very good. I'm so pleased to have a really lightweight wireless I can carry around. And I'll probably only use his for the gramophone. I can even take yours out of doors.
It's all right, you know.
Oh, Stephen, it was a much bigger present from you. You've been saving all your earnings, I know. Simon didn't have to save or work for it.
No. That was my privilege.
That seemed to me a most beautiful way for him to have put it. It made me sorrier for him than ever. So sorry, I found myself almost wishing I had fallen in love with him instead of with Simon. And suddenly, a wild idea flashed into my mind. Stephen, let's go for a walk. Let's see if there are any late bluebells in the wood.
All right, Cassandra.
Come on. I led the way all the time and reached the little grassy clearing in the wood before he did. There I turned and waited for him. He came closer and closer to me, then stood still, staring at me questioningly. I nodded my head.
Don't let me. Don't let me. Cassandra, please stop crying. Please stop. Please. It's all right. Really, it is. There's nothing wrong in it if we love each other.
I don't love you. I hate you. No, I don't mean that. Oh, I'll never be able to explain.
I am wicked. Asking Stephen to go into the wood was wicked to him and wicked to myself. And I have spoiled the memory of Simon's kiss. Oh, how can I face my wretched future?
I shall have to be Rose's bridesmaid, see her living with Simon at Scotney year after year, watch him worshipping her. And how am I going to hide my feelings when I see them together? And now I've heard Mrs. Foxcotton sent a telegram and Stephen is going off to London again. Oh, poor, poor Stephen.
Cassandra, I've had a letter from Rose and there isn't one word about Simon. Last weekend, when I stayed with Harry, his sister mentioned her fiancé 51 times. We made bets about it. Rose hardly ever mentioned Simon. She's not in love. It was a most peculiar letter. Just one enormous list of things that have been bought for her and how much everything has cost.
Couldn't I see it?
She wrote that she'd rather you didn't because it seemed awful she had so many lovely things when you have so few. But, you know, women are always marrying for money. I wouldn't worry. It's a godsend to us.
And what about Simon?
Simon? Oh, he's past help. He mentioned Rose's name 42 times the other day at Scotney, just while we were walking around the stables. I counted.
If Rose really loves him, I will never try to take him from her. But I must know the truth. I must see her. I will go to London on Saturday with Stephen. I waited in Mrs. Cotton's flat all day. Rose and Topaz were out with the Cottons at what Rose called the dullest matinee. Then Simon, Neil, Rose and I went dancing at a hotel in Park Lane and came home very late. I wore an utterly luxurious black dress of Rose's. She said it was only one of the ready-made ones bought to tide her over. Simon said it changed me, and he wasn't sure he approved of my growing up. He said I was perfect as I was. I saw a line of light under Simon's door in the flat that night and thought how close he would be sleeping, and for some reason that made me more unhappy than ever. Rose was already sitting up in bed, her bright hair looking so pretty against the white headboard. Beside her, on the table, stood a great bunch of red roses in a marble vase, and by it a card in Simon's writing saying, "Good morning, darling."
"Come on, Cassandra, come to bed. I put out one of my trousseau nightdresses for you. And here, could you chuck this card in the waste paper basket?"
"Rose, you don't love him."
"No. Isn't it a pity?"
"Well, say something."
"Why did you lie to me?"
"I didn't. I thought I was in love when he kissed me. Oh, you wouldn't understand."
"How long have you known?"
"I found out as soon as we came to London. Simon's with me so much more here. I can feel him asking for love. It makes me want to scream. Oh, God, I didn't mean to tell you. But don't worry, darling. I'm still going to marry him."
"No, you're not. You're not going to do anything so wicked."
"You always knew I'd marry him, whether I loved him or not. Why is it suddenly wicked?"
I didn't understand. It wasn't real."
"Well, it's real enough now."
"You can't do it, Rose. Not just for clothes and jewellery and bathrooms."
"You talk as if I were doing it all for myself. Do you know what my thoughts have been, lying here night after night? Well, at least they've had enough to eat at the castle today. And I've thought of you more than anyone."
"Then you can stop thinking, because I won't take anything from you. And you can stop pretending you're doing it for us all. It's simply to please yourself, because you can't face poverty. You're going to wreck Simon's life because you're greedy and cowardly."
"You're in love with him yourself." "Oh. Oh. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, it only needed that. Oh, he wouldn't fall in love with you. He just thinks of you as a little girl."
"What he thinks of me has nothing to do with it. It's him I'm thinking of, not me. You're not going to marry him without loving him."
"Don't you know he'd rather have me that way than not at all? Oh, darling, perhaps you only fancy you're in love with him. Perhaps, could it be half love?"
"I'm going home."
"You can't. There are no trains."
"Then I'll sit in the station till morning."
"But why?"
"I'm not going to lie down beside you."
"But what can I tell them?"
"Tell them what you damn well like. I'm going."
"Oh, Cassandra, I beg you to stay. You don't know."
"Oh, go and sit in your bathroom and count your peach-coloured towels, don't you? You lying, grasping little cheat." And I ran out. I walked through the streets until I came to Regent Street, and then to the corner house near Piccadilly, where I ordered a pot of tea and a lamb cutlet. And then found, to my horror, that I had left my purse in Rose's evening bag. I couldn't even ring Stephen at the Foxcottons because I had no money.
But when I prayed and pressed button B, a shower of pennies came out and I rang without stopping to think that it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Lida was furious, but I hadn't woken her. She and Stephen were alone, talking in her studio. She said it was disgusting the way I bothered him, but he just told me to stay where I was and wait. He'd be with me soon. He told me not to let any men talk to me. Oh, I was so relieved when he arrived and paid my bill. We walked to the river and stood leaning against the bridge, and tears rolled out of my eyes.
What is it, Cassandra? Is it something to do with me?
No, of course not.
I might have known that. Is it Neil?
No, it isn't Neil.
And it's Simon you're in love with. Rose will never let him go.
But she doesn't love him.
Rose is bad. Lots of women are.
Sometimes we're bad without meaning to be. Oh, Stephen, I was bad. I let you go on thinking I might get to love you.
Things like that happen when you're in love with the wrong person. Things like that happen when you're in love with the wrong person. Worse things. Things you never forgive yourself for.
Are you miserable because you made love to Lida Fox Cotton? It was her fault. You don't need to blame yourself.
I'll blame myself as long as I live. It's you I love and always will. Oh, Cassandra, are you sure? You liked it when I kissed you. Well, you seemed to. If we could get married, couldn't I help you through somehow? When Simon's married to Rose.
Please, please stop. I'm so fond of you that I could never marry you. Oh, Stephen, dear, I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Oh, it was awful. We came home on the first train, and I slept most of the way.
Cassandra, it's Simon. He's got Topaz with him.
Hello, we weren't expecting.
Miss Rose here?
Rose?
Oh, my God.
She's disappeared. Now, don't be frightened. It's not an accident or anything. She left a note for Simon, but, well, it didn't really explain anything.
No.
We thought she might have come down here to be with you. Oh, I had a telegram from her, though it only said she'd write when she couldn't. Would I please try to understand? I thought she was talking about... Well, we had a bit of a...
Where was the telegram handed in?
I didn't notice. Here. It's in my pocket. Here,
let me see.
Look, it's from that little seaside place where we went for the picnic.
Why on earth would she go there? And why couldn't the silly ass explain in her note?
She explained all right. It's no good trying to spare my feelings, Topaz. You may as well see what she says.
Dear Simon, I want you to know I wasn't lying in the beginning. I really thought I loved you. Now there is nothing I can do but beg your forgiveness.
Ah, that's that.
It's just a fit of engagement nerves. She's obviously gone to this place to think things out.
Would you be too tired to start right away?
Go after her, Simon. Are you sure that's her?
I must know.
I'll come with you.
Did you know how Rose felt about me? Forget it. It's not fair to ask you.
Simon.
I believe I'd rather not talk about it at all. Not till I know.
Before long, there was the feel of the sea in the air. The mist over the salt marshes was too thick for the sunrise to penetrate, but the whiteness was dazzling.
Are you sure this is the place we came for the picnic?
Oh, yes. I remember it very well. We could try that tiny inn there was down by the sea, out of the village.
That wasn't the sort of place she'd stay.
Let's try, though.
We drove along the lonely coast road. There was no mist over the sea. It was all pale, shimmering gold, so calm that the waves seemed only just able to crawl onto the shore and spread a lacy film over the sands.
Look, that's where we had the barbecue.
So it is. Is this the place? Listen, someone's awake already.
It's Rose.
Are you sure?
Certain.
Surely she couldn't sing like that if she wasn't happy.
Oh. Shall I call up to her?
Morning. You ready to come out and bathe?
Oh, but that was Neil.
It's all right. Don't look so agonized. I feel now as if I'd always known it.
Now it's October. I am up on the mound, close to the circle of stones in which there are still some bits of charred wood left from my midsummer fire. All the wheat fields are string-coloured stubble. The only bright colour I can see anywhere is the spindleberry bush down in the lane. Soon we will be surrounded by what Rose used to call a sea of mud. Rose. I had a letter from her this morning. She and Neil have driven across America and are now in the Californian desert. She is perfectly happy, except about her trousseau, which has turned into fairy gold. She only needs slacks and shorts now. I wish I didn't still feel so angry with her. And of course, I had never known that Neil had kissed her that night when she was taken for the bear after she slapped his face. Or that Stephen had seen. Or that he had gone to Neil and told him Rose wasn't in love with Simon and I was. There was so much I had not understood. I only saw her alone once before she went to America. On that awful day when we all went to the flat and everything was patched up and everyone had to forgive everyone else. And Stephen came in a well-cut suit, looking quite staggeringly handsome. Mrs. Cotton said, "One must be civilized." Then we had a hollow champagne lunch. Simon has just come down here to say goodbye. He is going to New York, so he can be there when Father's new book first comes out in publication. He is going to write some articles on it.
I shall be back soon.
I wonder whether America will claim you.
I could never desert Scotney. Give me your hand. It's not a green hand this time. I wish I could take you with me. Would you like to come?
If only I were trained to do shorthand and typing, I could come as your secretary. I don't know that I'd care to be away from Father too long this year. But if ever the circumstances were... well, favorable.
Wise young judge.
He turned my hand over and kissed the palm. And now he's gone. Oh, why? Why must Simon still love Rose? The daylight is going. I can hardly see what I'm writing and my fingers are cold. There is only one more page left in my beautiful blue leather manuscript book. But that is all I need. I have so little left to write. Only half a page now. A mist is rolling over the fields. Why is summer mist romantic and autumn mist just sad? He said he would come back. Only the margin left to write on now. And I write. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith was dramatized for radio by Dawn Lowe Watson. Cassandra was played by Amanda Root and Rose by Helena Bonham Carter. Topaz was played by Hayden Gwynn, Simon by William Dufries, Neil by Stuart Milligan, Stephen by Jamie Glover, and Father by Geoffrey Whitehead. Other parts were played by Robert Harper, Anne Beach, Patience Tomlinson, David Timpson, and Jonathan Adams. I Capture the Castle was directed by Cherry Cookson.